The legendary author Clive Cussler has kept fans turning pages for more than 40 years. Clive grew up in California and attended Pasadena City College. At the outbreak of the Korean War, Clive enlisted in the Air Force and served as an aircraft mechanic, then flight engineer in the Military Air Transport Service. Once discharged, he became a copywriter and worked his way up to be creative director at two leading ad agencies. He began writing novels in 1965 and published his first Dirk Pitt novel in 1973. Cussler's breakout Raise the Titanic firmly established Dirk Pitt as one of the leading men in adventure fiction. Clive is the founder of the National Underwater and Marine Agency, NUMA, a nonprofit organization dedicated to American maritime and naval history. Among the 75 wrecks found, NUMA's most notable discovery may be the H.L. Hunley, an 1864 Confederate submarine best known as the first sub to sink a ship in battle. It was found buried in Charleston Harbor in 1995 and is still undergoing restoration. His best-selling nonfiction books, The Sea Hunters and The Sea Hunters II, describe the true adventures of the real NUMA. Clive is also a noted collector of classic cars and owns more than 100 vehicles. The collection is housed in a museum near Golden, Colorado. Clive now splits his time between Colorado and Arizona. Today we'll speak with Clive about his new title, The Assassin. Welcome, Clive, and it's such a pleasure to have you with us on the Book Report.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
For those who haven't met him yet, can you introduce us to Isaac Bell?
I introduce you to Isaac Bell. Well, he's a little different than, most of your detectives are usually from New York or whatever, plus their present day, where Isaac Bell is, he's of a detective agency like the Pinkertons, only it's called the Van Dorns. And his time era is anywhere from 1895 up to 1919. So it's fun to work with him in that era because you can describe old cars, old motorcycles, how the ladies are dressed with a Gibson girl look. And it's just great fun to set a different setting.
Why did you decide to take on John D. Rockefeller and Standard Oil in The Assassin?
Well, we... Justin Scott and I, who I work with, decided to take with him in his time zone there, eras. In other words, we go in where there's the big problems were with the coal strikes, and then the next book would be where the Mississippi River, all the trains and the ferry boats and how the big train moguls are fighting over, lines where they go. And, that kind of a situation, like even Prohibition, we touched on that. And so it's fun to take, a background of that era, which was big news then, and then work it into a book with detectives, villains, and so much adventure and excitement.
What kind of research did you do to write convincingly about the oil fields in Baku, Russia in 1905?
Well, it's there. It's a question of, just digging into it, finding the old newspapers even and the old records and what you can find out. And, of course, the Internet now, it's just about anything you can find. Where the old days, I had to go to a library. So it's there. It's just, if you want to look for it, you can find all sorts of things, lost mysteries, lost civilizations, whatever. So it's just a great fun when you get into really reading about it, things you don't know.
Can you describe your writing process with Justin Scott? How does it work?
Justin and I will get together, and then we have to come up with a plot. So, most good, mysteries, adventures, it's a very simple basis. It's what if. So, what if, this the oil situation and this assassin's killing all the oil men there, shooting them. So we go from there. And so then he'll go off and he'll write, and I'll still research and note. And then we'll get together on the first 100 pages and firm those up. And then he goes off, and starts the second 100, and I still do some of the research for it. And then they'll come out and I may rewrite some or, you know, edit when the book is finished, manuscript, and send it into the publisher.
Hmm. You've written books with your son, Dirk, also. How is that process?
That's the same thing. Dirk was funny. He got an MBA at UCLA and then got a job as a financial analyst at Motorola for 13 years, and he just got tired. He couldn't do it anymore. But he didn't know what he wanted to do, and I said, why don't you write a Dirk Pitt book? Oh, my God, I can't do that. And I said, you've read them all. And I said, I'll help you write it, you know. So he did, and he did a very nice job, and he's done, I think, four books since.
You'd have to believe that Dirk was in his DNA, right? Can you tell us a bit about NUMA and how you became interested in underwater exploration?
Oh, it all started when I was in the service back in the 50s and flying transport planes back and forth between Tokyo and during the Korean situation. And so when I'd stop in Hawaii, I'd go, first of all, surfing, and then I'd go snorkeling. And a buddy of mine and I, we thought, gosh, this is, let's get to that new, you know, regulator and the tank that this guy in France, Cousteau, came out with. So we sent a check for $35 for a tank and a regulator, which is what it all only cost in those days. And then it took 3 months, and it finally came, and we just took it out to the base, to a hangar, and filled it up the tank with some old air, stale air, and a compressor. And then we ran out into the ocean. Fortunately, we didn't go beyond 30 feet because there was no instruction or anything. We just put it on and breathed. So that's how it all started, and I got interested in photography and spearfishing and all that, and then I found an old Hawaiian a trawler off of Hawaii, and that just, you know, you see a shipwreck on the bottom and you're just thrilled by it. So when I could afford it, then I started, you know, funding expeditions to go out and look for historic shipwrecks. People would think I belong in a rubber room under restraint because I never look for treasure.
We're speaking with Clive Cussler on the Book Report. And how did you get into vintage automobile collecting?
Well, that started in high school, I think. I had a big black Auburn limousine, and my buddies and I paid, I think, $20 for it in those days. And my buddies and I, we'd dress up as gangsters with overcoats, fedoras, smoking cigars. And I played the violin when I was a little kid. And so, but that ended, and it was up, the violin was up in the garage, so I pulled it down and got the case. And when we go to the football games, and my big limo dressed as gangsters, the guards at the gate never knew that I had the violin case filled with beer and wine.
That's funny. Do you converse regularly with other vintage car collectors like Jay Leno?
Oh yeah. I've seen Jay's collection. It's just incredible what he's put together. I remember one time we both had 36 cars. Now I've only got 137. He's got about 300.
Wow.
So, but he's got quite a collection. It's a marvelous. But it's not generally open to the public. But,
yeah. Well, yours is in a museum that is open to the public, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Ma'am.
My daughter. I just stored them like he's doing, and then my daughter said, why don't we turn it into a museum? And I said, fine. So she took it over and has done a wonderful job. And, it's got a good reputation for tourists.
Well, back to the writing. What projects are you working on now?
Starting another one, I'm working on the Fargos. That one's coming up. This is one of the few husband and wife teams, in this case, they go around and look for treasure. But the fun part with them is it's kind of like a Thin Man series, you know, the two of them together. They're well off, and they always get involved in searching for treasure and get into all kinds of trouble. And so they're fun to work with. And then there's the Oregon Files, which is this old beat-up tramp steamer, you know, that flies around the world. And it's like a Mission Impossible. The mercenaries on board, this old ship that looks like it's ready to sink, but actually inside it's has these huge engines that can pump it out at 50 miles an hour.
Hmm.
And all this armament on board, and the mercenaries, you know, where the ship isn't look like an old dump, where everybody, the mercenaries, live. It's, you know, they got their own chef and then Van Gogh paintings hanging on the walls. So it's kind of a fun situation.
So any final thoughts about Isaac Bell and the assassin?
Well, yeah, because this one, it was on the basis of the oil, you know, what was going on with the oil, Standard Oil, Rockefeller, and the fascination of, you know, him taking over this oil field over in, you know, Russia. And so that's things like that nobody knows about. I mean, it's in the history books, but nobody reads about them. So it was fun to use Rockefeller as, you know, like as he got there and bought out, you know, the oil fields. And then the fact that he wasn't really all as bad as he was made out to be, but and then he became a great philanthropist. And so it's just a fascinating era. You know, besides the detective, Isaac Bell, it's just the era that nobody really, you know, remembers. Young people today don't know anything about the turn of the century or what was going on.
Yeah, it really was a great read. Well, Clive, thank you so much for joining us today.